Welcome to the Pentapod. If you're looking for insights on how to build and deliver digital transformation in your organization, you're in the right place. We can't wait to share the tips, tricks, and opinion from the experts across the industry. So stick around.
My name's Nathan Bethel. We're going to be talking about IT maintenance solutions and all of the security around that. Today, two guests in the room. We have Amanish Patel and Steve Wilkinson. So let me come to you first, Steve. Can you give us a little bit more detail around what they are, what they entail, and what some of the pain points that they solve for clients?
Yeah, sure. Well, hello, everybody. Maybe I should introduce myself. My name is Steve Wilkinson. I'm the Chief Technology Officer of Rebasoft. We've been running the business for 11 years now. And before that, I worked for McAfee, where I ran their European cybersecurity part of the business with firewalls, encryptions, and so on. And before that, an earlier part of my career, I was with IBM's networking division. And the Rebasoft project and the product and where we're going today has really come from those backgrounds, which is really looking at how networks and security and monitoring are really all different aspects of the same thing that our customers struggle with. And the IT maintenance project and offering that we have is really just a packaging of what many of our customers are looking to do at the moment. So we're having this conversation in the middle of the COVID, just after the second lockdown, and this has highlighted a number of issues and a number of changes, some short term, some long term. And one of the key things is the economic damage that's been done, as we were talking about before the meeting, and how many of our customers are desperate to find ways of trimming costs off their budgets. And a natural conversation that we've had is how we can use a combination of technology and Penta's know-how to effectively slice huge sums of money off of annual maintenance without the customers necessarily having an impact by a drop in standards of that maintenance. And so the project and the offering that we've got is effectively founded on that.
And that fits in nicely then in terms of our managed solutions and offering. How does that work?
I mean, for us, it's a very good fit because Penta predominantly have been working within the IT and telecom space for the last 20 odd years. And the customers that we focus on are all the way from your financials over to the telco side. And a lot of these companies have a lot of users, and understanding Rebasoft product, users also bring risk. So I think for us, explaining this to our customers, giving them that offering on top of what we do at the moment is a no-brainer. And I think the product itself is a great offering packaged together. And so you get the whole maintenance service. So you get the software from Rebasoft and then the professional services from Penta, which gives you that whole managed service end-to-end deliverable. So we're able to look after your network from start to finish. And today, hopefully, we can give you a little bit more of an insight into what the product does, how it works, how it interacts, and some examples of implementations we've had. So if I bounce that back to you, Steve, if you had to explain the product in two or three bullet points, how would you best sum it up?
Okay, so the modern networks designed to try and give anything that connects to the network the best possible service. So if you plug a phone into the network, you obviously want to make sure that your voice doesn't sound like max headroom, or if you're doing large file transfers and things like that.
Yeah.
And so pretty much since the network was first developed, a lot of intelligence has been built into the network infrastructure so that it can actually decide, if you plug a particular piece of equipment in, how you get the best service. Now, it turns out that same information is also available to software and systems that can read and understand it to provide a number of really, really valuable pieces of information for customers. So the most obvious one is when something goes wrong, how you can quickly pinpoint it. If there is performance bottlenecks, how you can use that same information for tuning that out. And then more recently, with the sort of the rise of cybercrime and all that this will be holding within that, you can use that same information to try and figure out if there's something bad going on in your network and if there's something there that shouldn't be. So primarily, Rivasoft plugs into that really rich source of information to really understand your network, to discover your network, figure out what's good and bad on the network, and then potentially if there's something bad, to allow you to automate a response to it. Because it's no good saying, oh, we found a PC on the network, and then someone's got to walk around and spends 2 weeks trying to find it and then unplug it from the network, because there's potentially a lot of bad stuff that's going on there.
So it's real time. So we're talking real time, letting you know there and then when it happens.
Yeah, and our customers struggle with that because many customers are driven by what the press has said and sort of prevailing views in the press about, well, you've got to monitor your network and you've got to have this system and that system and so on. And that people can't afford to have all of these bits of software. And it's not just the software, it's the people to learn how to operate them, it's the server equipment and the rack space. And then all of this software is then going out and doing a lot of the same stuff. So your network's being overloaded. In fact, our largest global customer, when you actually look at the traffic on their network, the top talker on their network is one of these network analysis protocols. So they spend more time pushing network management traffic around their network than they do selling and doing their systems. And so there's a number of things that we're seeing is that despite putting all these systems in, customers are not managing their networks particularly well. And in fact, as we know with the IT maintenance solution, a lot of customers don't even know what their networks are.
Yep.
So if you don't know what your networks are, you know, how it's being utilised and what's actually out there, how can you possibly ensure that you're spending the right amount of money and the right amount of maintenance money on that? And indeed, you know, if I've got maybe a really expensive network switch that's sat in a laboratory that I'm testing, do I need to have 4-hour engineer on site for that piece of equipment, whereas I've maybe got a much smaller, less valuable piece of equipment out there that's critical in a remote office? And so the Rivasoft system allows you to collect that information automatically so that you can have these conversations with your customers and say, well, you know, we recommend that you could save money on your maintenance budget because this stuff's not important. You know, and maybe that can be, you know, return to base or manufacturer's warranty or whatever, because it's not important. Whereas this critical piece of equipment is important for us. And so therefore you're making a negotiated and reasoned case based upon information rather than a guess. And I talked to one network manager who was spending £1 million a year with Cisco on his maintenance. I said, oh, so how are you able to calculate? He said, we just take an educated guess. And we do a negotiation. And so they could either be paying too little, which is in their favour, in which case the vendor's missing out on money, or they're overpaying, which is probably where they actually are. So
is that more typical?
That's probably more typical, because the vendor's not going to give money away.
I could also see the benefit as well, where if there's two organisations that are merging, both have different infrastructures, maybe they're going to lose a lot of staff within that transition period as well. So something like the Rivasoft tool would be perfect for them to understand what's across those two organisations, what can they do with it, what do they have, and whether they want to take it. So it could actually give you that roadmap as well, that data, couldn't it?
It can do. And actually, there's two brilliant ways in which you can actually talk to your customers. Either they're merging, or, you know, they're splitting apart, they're divesting
a company. Yeah. Yeah.
And in both cases, being able to look at, you know, what needs to be got rid of, what needs to be integrated in. And often one of the objections that we get with customers, oh, we don't have time to implement Rivasoft, or we don't have time to implement this because we're busy doing this merger or this divestiture of this business. And you're thinking, well, how on earth can you do that without information? And you get to the stage where people are walking around with clipboards and, you know, looking under desks and tracing cables out of wiring closets. Well, it's expensive.
Historically as well, I think a lot of companies have hired a man in a van or people to physically go out to these sites, like you said, with a clipboard, a piece of paper. It's done on the eye, so you don't know if you're getting good information there.
Yeah.
And I suppose if you're using technology to make it work for you, it's a no-brainer.
From a scale perspective, what size of organisation, how large can that scale up to?
I'm going to give a techie's answer here, and there's nothing cut and dried here. Because you can measure an organisation in different ways. So is it based upon revenue? Well, if you look at a hedge fund, they turn over trillions with probably 30 people. So revenue is not a great measure. You know, the number of employees is not necessarily a great measure either. or the size of the network. And so it's always going to be business case related. But if I was to say a rule of thumb, you know, any organisation that's smaller than about 400 to 500 employees is probably not got enough of a scale of an issue to justify them, you know, doing all this stuff. And so that sweet spot, maybe 1,000 employees to, you know, to 4,000 or 5,000 employees, is probably where you're going to get the most return. Everybody's got the same problem. So, you know, I was talking to a school with 700 or 800 pupils, and they only have 2 people in their IT department. And they've got all of the things, you know, they've got to keep pupils safe. You can't have people hopping onto the school Wi-Fi network and letting the kids go to whatever the places that people go now. You know, that's an important thing, because the school will get shut down from that perspective. Everything now is online, particularly with COVID. People are doing online education. So
that's the place in the background.
Yeah, that's the security special effect in the background there. So even the small organisations now have got the same pressures as large organisations. So proportionally, they might have a smaller network, but they've got smaller teams, they've got the same problems.
But I suppose I think one of the advantages as well is that also, if we look at it from a device perspective, so you could have an organisation with a small number of employees or people, but they could have multiple devices. They could have laptops, phones, iPads. I mean, we all carry technology with us everywhere we go.
Yeah.
We've all got it at home. We all try and log on with different things onto our networks when we're trying to work. So whereas you could have an organisation with 10 or 20 people, but they could have over 100 devices. So, I mean, that would also appeal to those types of people as well, wouldn't it?
It would do, but again, you know, from a small organisation, from a technology fit, it doesn't matter. You know, you can scale from, you know, a few hundred, probably a few hundred is maybe the bottom end of it, to a few 100,000 employees. So the technology will scale. So that's not so much the issue. It's really about, as an organisation, from a sales perspective, where you're going to get your best return. And you raise an interesting point there. You know, we've talked mainly about IT maintenance from a networking perspective, but there are many more aspects of maintenance that may offer a future for you. And I'll give an example. I was talking to a customer yesterday. They're in the business of providing managed services into the health service. And the technologist I was talking to was talking about the contracts that they got. And they were responsible for monitoring and managing and patching the service and the network and things like that. So vulnerability actually is an interesting thing. We'll come and talk about that in a minute. And I said to him, so how do you control that? He said, unfortunately, the contract we had to sign meant that, the contracts that we normally sign say that nobody can touch the servers, only we can do that. And so we're in charge of change control. But in this particular customer set, and it's common within the National Health Service in the UK, is that the customer can still access the servers. And he said, we found out quite accidentally the other day that in the last 7 days they'd commissioned 8 more servers and nobody thought to tell us about it. It was only because we had an accidental conversation. And he said, that's where we intend to use the discovery capabilities about Rebusoft, because it's not just us knowing the server's there, but then incorporating those into our vulnerability scanning and our patching process.
Well, that's a good point, because that's also from a commercial governance perspective as well. So if you've agreed a scope of work with a customer that includes 10 pieces and all of a sudden the customer's put 15 pieces in there, so then that's a very good point to make, that if you're aware of that, then yes, you should be doing that.
And that's one of the differences between the Rebusoft technologies and a lot of the traditional management technologies out there.
Yeah.
And that is, I'm not going to go into the competition, but most of the competition, you have to say, here's a piece of equipment, keep an eye on it for me. And therefore, over time, as that equipment changes, you know, maybe it breaks and it gets swapped out, someone's got to go in there and, you know, and tell the system to look at something else. Or someone spins up. And by the way, these servers I was just talking about, these are virtual servers. So someone can spin up a virtual server in a matter of seconds. And they can be there for a small amount of time and then disappear again. So sometimes you would have no record of them. And that can be really bad if you have a cyber attack during that process. Bad guys get in, use a server, and then that server's gone, and you've got no idea how it happened. And so this managing and discovery has to go hand in glove. And there's commercial implications in that. You know, we have some organisations who are doing managed antivirus. That's a big thing in the security industry, where you are responsible for putting antivirus on all the PCs and the servers and things like that. And one of the most difficult things is, well, how many PCs have I got? Mm. When do I take that snapshot? And this is, as you said, Amanesh, is if it's not real time, certainly from a security perspective, you've got no idea what's out there. And the bad guys only need one computer and one opportunity to get in. And
well, now it's milliseconds, isn't it?
It is,
I mean, you literally just need a quick opportunity. Yeah. And I think the other point to make on that as well is that if you don't have a handle of what's in your network, with the way that the industries are now really coming down, like a ton of bricks on companies for leaking of data, data breaches, and I think this is where, for us, definitely for Penta and Rebusoft, it's a great offering because it also covers that aspect of it. So data security breaches, again, what company wants to get fined hundreds of thousands of pounds for having data breaches? And this can help towards that.
It can. I mean, we're not saying that deploying Rebusoft will prevent data breaches, but one of the things that the regulators take a very dim view of is the fact you didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Or you didn't know about it for months on end, and that's where the big fines come from. Whereas if you have a mechanism to do security monitoring, which you can also do with the Rebusoft platform, whether you charge extra for that or whether you know that's how you sell that is a different matter. But as soon as it detects a breach, you're going to know about it.
There's an alert.
And then there's a chance you can do something to stop the severity of it. But a lot of these high-profile fines you're seeing, you know, now we're leaving the EU or with Brexit happening, you know, the whole thing about GDPR and all these data rules is not going to go away.
Yeah.
And just as a side note, I was talking to he was the head of application development for one of the big Swiss banks, and he was talking about it as well. He said that, you know, back in the early 2000s, up to maybe 2010, the noughties, said if there was a cyber security issue, nobody really cared about it.
Yeah.
And then as these got more and more severe and people started to lose data and regulations changed, big fines came in and you're starting to see people losing their jobs. And he said, you know, people losing their jobs is going to come along. So this is 10 years ago I was talking to him about that. And he said, there will come a stage where if someone is seen to be negligent, members of the board will be put in prison. He said, it's becoming, you know, our society and everything's becoming so intricately entwined with the use of IT that people could have done something to prevent it and didn't. That's negligence. And just in the same way as, you know, if you're negligent driving without due care and attention, you're gonna be put in jail. And he said he could see a time. So he's been right twice so far. And you can see the way, you know, the society's becoming, everybody else is to blame. And if your data is lost and you've lost money,
well, it's a chain reaction, isn't it?
So
you've got the engineers that do the day-to-day monitoring of it.
Yeah.
Their responsibility goes back up to the IT director or the head of networks. And then again, like you just mentioned there, it's going back up to the board. So everybody should have an active interest in making sure that they know what's happening in their networks. And I think that's what's so fantastic about this. It gives you that view, gives you that understanding.
It does. And from a sales perspective, it would be interesting, you know, if everybody who's listening to this who's got an end user, if you look at the annual reports, if it's a public limited company, at the back end or somewhere in the annual reports, there's a risk analysis for the business, and increasingly IT risks, IT security risks are becoming an aspect of that. And boards are getting tuned into it and educated about it. When we first got into this, we kind of had this view that everybody's resistant to the story that we've got.
Yeah.
Which is about, you know, security and problems like that. And most of the people we talk to, they want to do a good job for the company they're working to. They're diligent, you know. They'll moan about the fact they haven't got the tools to do the job, you know, or how difficult the job is. But most people, there's very few security or IT directors that are so arrogant to say, no, we're not interested. So one of the things that we used to get, we've got a feature coming out about vulnerability, which is a massive issue in the industry at the moment. You know, Microsoft has something called Patch Tuesday.
Right.
Yeah, you've heard of this, which is an indication that there are so many vulnerabilities and bugs that are affecting so many people that Patch Tuesday is becoming a big thing. So we talk about the fact that we have integrated vulnerability scanning in our product. Now, the beauty of the way we do it is you don't have to go out there and tell someone to vulnerability scan this switch like the traditional products do, or go and scan this server. But if you don't know about the server, I talked about these 8 servers, how could you vulnerability scan that? And actually, when you say, oh, we've got a vulnerability scanning tool, and people go, well, we've got one of those, the next question you ask is, well, how does that work for you?
Yeah.
And the answers you get then are quite revealing. Oh, it's expensive. Oh, it's really difficult to do. And then, of course, the answer is, well, you know, we're doing your IT maintenance. If we could do your vulnerability scanning, make life easier for you and charge a fraction of what you're doing now, would you be interested? And normally the answer is, yeah, I'd be really interested in that. My renewal for XYZ products coming up in 6 months' time.
I think the biggest thing for me when we were looking at this prior to us forming a partnership was that a lot of these companies have these products that have been in there for such a long time that did the job for the network 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
As the equipment's evolved, the actual piece of equipment that's checking it or doing the vulnerability or the security part of it hasn't. Yeah. So they're using these brand names from 4-5 years ago with basic features, and if they now want to upgrade and get it to do something a little bit more all singing or dancing,
yeah,
it's a hell of a cost.
You're absolutely right. It's a massive cost. And you know, that the whole thing with COVID, and there's a load of other things. I was talking to a company in the Middle East, and 5 years ago, if I was in the Middle East, I wouldn't have a chance of being able to sell Rebusoft in there, because unless you're in the top right-hand Gartner quadrant, that's where they used to buy. But with, you know, Brent crude at, what, $40 a barrel, their economies are in real trouble, and everybody now is looking for much more value.
Yeah.
You know, so if you think about it in the car world, unless you're like super rich, and I won't go into that, a lot of people drive around in, you know, SUVs, the Americans call them. You know, so you have one car that, while it might not be best at doing everything, you've got one car that does every job. You know, so you get your kids in there, the groceries in there, the dog in there,
yeah,
put a tow bar and it'll tow a caravan. You know, most of them, if you get a big engine, will give you a pretty good run for your money in terms of performance. Now, is that SUV as good as a Ferrari, or as good as, you know, say a Land Rover or a tractor off-road, or you know, a small van? No, it's not. But very few families can buy half a dozen cars for all the things they might like to do it, so they buy the SUV. And I kind of think about us, Rebusoft, as a bit of an SUV. We do all of these things, and we do them pretty well. But if I come against a Ferrari, then I'm never going to beat that off the place. Or if I come against a transit van, I'm not going to get the same.
It's a good analogy. It's almost saying that it's a workhorse. It's there for a function.
Yeah.
It does the job. Yeah. It's not all singing or dancing, yeah, but it gets it done, and it will give you what you need it to do. And I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, and the customers really, really like it. You know, I mentioned COVID again. The things that people are looking forward to now, I mean, I say looking forward as in forward in time as opposed to savouring the prospect of it, is that as the vaccine gets rolled out and COVID and lockdown is coming to an end, we will see a return to the office for a lot of reasons. This home working thing has been an experiment. In some cases it's worked okay, but by and large a lot of businesses are saying it's not productive for us. I think some of the big banks are saying we're now starting to reel people in. So if you think that through, you've had people with kit in their homes doing goodness knows what on the internet, or even if they've not been using that equipment, you know, it's been connected at the same time that maybe their son's been surfing, or daughter's been surfing some, you know, clickbait site and downloaded some virus and it's going to spread around. So you bring these devices back into the office, and how do you know they're going to be secure? And you won't know about that until they're in there, because a lot of the things that we find, and I think I mentioned this probably in the last couple of months, I've talked about 60 or 70 end users, and it's surprising how a lot of these issues that they've got are the same. One is all this kit that's going to come back into the office secure, and how do I know it is? Because they don't have any mechanisms to be able to measure that. Well, we have an answer for that. And the second thing is that if all this stuff is coming back in, there's going to be a new set of vulnerabilities that are revealed, because the bad guys are developing all of this kind of malware and all these exploits and things like that. You know, we don't know the half of it. If you remember a couple of years ago, the NSA was hacked, had a disaffected employee in WannaCry immediately came out of that. There's probably a ton of stuff in there that we don't know about. You know, maybe the Microsofts and the NSA and stuff like that use, but they spend a lot of trying to suppress the fact that they found a vulnerability in software. So there's a lot of vulnerabilities out there. And if you don't have a much more real-time view of being able to look at any vulnerabilities, then you've got this kind of almost perfect storm of all these people come back to the office with all kinds of nasty stuff on their laptops. And then you've got all these new vulnerabilities that are going to come out. And traditionally, the vulnerability scanning systems that that are out there, maybe scan once a week, once a month. In some cases, I've talked to a company, they do a once a year vulnerability scan.
Yeah,
it's pretty scary stuff. And so you're going to have all this bad stuff coming back into your network, and you spend all this money on these firewalls, all this money on you know, you've got card entry systems, and I walk in with my laptop that's got some little bit of vulnerability on that nobody knows about, and then your history.
Yeah, I think for, also on top of that, for the bigger organisations that have so-called network operation centres where they've got people looking at screens 24/7, this could easily be deployed and be part of their monitoring tool, couldn't it? Where they could use that in a NOC environment, plug that in there, and have that as one of the additional dashboards or information that comes through around the network.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, different people are interested in different things in an organisation. And just while you were talking there, I just opened my phone. We did some work with a couple of guys who are running consultancy. One was the CIO of Deutsche Post. They're both retired now.
Yeah.
And the other one, I think he was pretty far up in Glaxo. But they looked at different people in an organisation, you know, from the chief executive down through to, you know, probably as low as project managers, you know, head of network infrastructure, and what each of them are interested in and what each of them do as part of their roles. And the problem with management reporting system, which will give you a view based upon historic data that is out of date and looks at the data in a very different way, can give you a very different picture from someone who's maybe got a network monitoring tool that's looking at stuff in real time.
Yeah.
And this kind of the way that data percolates up in the organization, nobody likes to get bad news. They often get fired for it, or, you know, they don't get asked again. And so the way that information percolates up from the bottom to the top often changes.
Right.
And one of the things about the fact that you mentioned we've got these dashboards, our dashboards use the same data collected from the network, but just process it and present it in a way that maybe a chief executive or a CIO might be interested in. But that same data can be used by, you know, a network manager or a security manager or even a security professional, you know, or a network professional on the network trying to solve problems. And so everybody has the same, has a different view on the same information. So everybody is able to look at it in their way, but they're looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and there's very few products on the marketplace that do that.
So you could actually have that interface filtered. So if I was a member of the board and all I was interested in was the high level figures to say that X amount of breaches over a 2 month period, 3 month period, or types of breaches, very high level.
Yeah.
I could have that. Yeah. Or if I wanted to see right the way down to a minute level where I wanted to see which switch, where, what, how, when, time, I could also have that as well, couldn't I?
You could do. Absolutely. And it's the beauty of the way that we've, and the remit I gave, and I tried to remind the development team when they're putting this together, is that from a high level piece of information or a high level alert, you need to be able to go to the scene of the crime or the scene of the crash very, very quickly. One of our customers, before they implemented us, their security operations manager said that they got an alert from one of their security systems. And because the network management team was not intimately involved in it, it took from 17 hours from that alert to actually being able to identify the precise location of where that device was.
Wow. I think a lot of people would also maybe asking a question to say, how does it actually work? Does it take up bandwidth within my network? Is it going to take up space in my network? How's it going to be deployed?
That's a good question. There are many deployment options, and it depends on what the customer wants. So the answer to the question is really, how does the customer want it to be deployed? And so you should never get to a situation and go, well, we can't deploy it. So that it takes that issue away. But the way, unless you're getting into the active security where you're wanting to remove things from the network, is that we only ever receive or we read information. We never really impact the device that we've got. And we don't require you to install any software on any of the PCs or servers or things like that. And actually, if you think about it, if I've got a printer, how could you monitor that if you can't install software on that? And also, if you think about the fact that if you can get away with fewer systems, we actually have less of an impact on the network than probably four or five systems that you are that you're using today. So deploying Rebusoft can reduce your network load. We'll just tap into all of the existing things that customers are collecting anyway with a variety of other systems. So there's typically no change.
Yeah.
And it's maybe one or two servers that are on the customer site, because we don't like to be sending lots of information up to the cloud if it's a, if it's a cloud deployed service. Yeah, and that's one of the objections. Oh, it must be a cloud deployed service. So, well, okay, we can run a component in the cloud in Azure or Amazon EC2, but still a proportion of the collection and processing of the information is on the customer side. And for a variety of technical and operational reasons, it works like that. And even if you go for some of our competitors who are pure software as a service plays, they still have to deploy an element down into the customer's network. They might disguise it as a probe or an agent or you know, something else, but it's still essentially the same thing. There is a bit of their software that has to go down on the customer site for security, for performance, and for visibility means. So, and we work exactly the same as them. So again, that shouldn't be an objection.
Okay.
So, the next thing is, okay, so the customer signs up, we deploy our little, you know, component down into the customer's network. We have some security credentials. And we start discovering the network. And you can get results within a few hours of this starting up. It's really, really quick. And then there's probably a process of going through and validating this with the customer. But if you can't get this up and running within a couple of weeks, I'd be really surprised.
I think one of the key things as well to add is that with this offering going to market, trials, I mean, we want to see customers approach us and ask us to see how does it work. And we can show them how it works, because I'm pretty confident is... when we get to that point where a customer sees it actually in the flesh, they're going to want it.
Yeah.
Because for what it does and the product it is, it's going to add value to the organisation. So, I mean, for me, I think the biggest thing is get in touch, because we can help you understand what that looks like, help you through that product, and even talk you through any sorts of concerns that you may have.
If there's a specific problem and you solve that problem during the proof of concept, that's kind of the other end. The other thing to think about as well, which is related to the last point, is that quite a lot of the customers that you deal with will probably not have the skills or experience to be able to run the proof of concept on their own. So you can't just think about dropping this in and then coming back in 3 weeks and them going, great. It's not like sort of using Microsoft Word and... and doing that. In fact, I jotted down here, I was determined to get this in. I read this quote, actually. It was attributed to Albert Einstein, but everything was attributed to him. And he said, you know, what's the difference between genius and stupidity? And so that genius has its limits. And, you know, I kind of think about that in terms of skills of our customers. It's probably a little bit harsh, is that there are very few really skilled people you'll meet in the organisations that you deal with.
Yeah, and I think from that side of things, that the whole offering comes together quite nicely, because obviously the product itself, professional services and the know-how and that aftercare implementation, ongoing support delivered by Penta. So it goes hand in hand, where the customer will get that guidance around the product, any ongoing type of support, obviously backed up by you guys from a software perspective as
Absolutely, and that's a winning combination.
So... thanks for listening to the Pentapod. Really appreciate the guys sharing their expertise and knowledge.
Thank you for joining us for the Pentapod. Click subscribe to ensure you don't miss the next episode, and you'll stay up to date across all the latest news and opinion within the digital transformation industry. See you on the next Pentapod.